Hey guys, Justin here. We got a great episode of the podcast with Martin Rickman of Dime Up Rocks. But first, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor for this week, Untuckit. Untuckit is giving you guys 20% off at checkout when you use code BLUE. That's code BLUE at checkout. I also want to encourage you guys to check out the Chase Down Premium. Give the Chase Down Premium a quick Google search. You'll find the link there. So it's a way to directly support the podcast. 99 cents for your first month, $5 a month after that. We got youth reports, weekly verbal essays about the young players and how they're doing, their stats for the week, breaking news, and a whole bunch of bonus content, off-topic stuff with Carter and myself. So I encourage you guys to go check it out. I think you'll like it. And at 99 cents for the first month, there's no risk. If we suck, you can always cancel it. So thank you guys. And now to the podcast.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over, Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young bro! Continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Carter Rodriguez is still away on paternity leave. So to help me talk about the Cavs is Martin Rickman from Dime Up Rocks. Martin, we're here to talk about a team that's very near and dear to your heart, and this is a podcast that is much, much overdue. How are you doing, buddy?
Good, man. I'm glad it's not a parenting podcast because it's also not for me, so I wouldn't do very well on that one.
That's not my thing. I'm pretty good with dogs, but good for Carter doing the whole repopulating the earth. That's I feel like that's important and something left to the adults. But we are here to talk about the surging Cleveland Cavaliers, winners of four of their last five games. Sure, they had that one little loss against Boston, but I wouldn't worry about that little guy. How much of the Cavs have you had a chance to watch lately? And what do you kind of make of this little bit of a mini surge that they've had?
Well, the discussion for a long time was that their schedule was really hard to start the year anyway. So it's one of those things with these young teams where there's this desire, drive to panic when you're an NBA fan, especially of a team that's losing games, right? Look at how excited people got about the Suns' start, and then they came back down to earth. But for whatever reason, you don't see bad teams when they start to win games. People don't recalibrate expectations. They just say, oh, they're still terrible, or now they're winning games, or other teams are taking them seriously. But you know what you want to see when you're a team that was in the bottom five and was historically maybe the worst defense in the history of the NBA is progress. And you can't just dismiss progress. And this is the thing that always drives me nuts of drive-by Twitter, is that people don't watch the team. Then a team wins games, but those games are less important than the 30 minutes of a game they saw in October. So I think it's really a good thing. It shows that, you know, despite reports and despite, you know, grumblings or anything else that's going on, when you have veterans and young players with a coach who is trying to help young players who maybe have never been coached before or have not had a lot of coaching in the days in which they've played, or especially in the last year plus of the time they've been playing, that maybe veterans don't necessarily respond to that the same way, and that you kind of need both ships going in different directions, and everyone can kind of just wave on the way by. And this is one of those times where they're in the middle of that, but there's a lot of progress to be seen. I mean, it's amazing that, you know, a little bit of confidence goes a long way for a player who was universally a top five talent in Darius Garland. And look at that, some shots start falling and he looks like an NBA player.
Yeah, but, you know, it's very surprising that
he wasn't one.
Yeah, it's very surprising that a guy that's essentially a high school to pro prospect at one of the toughest positions to play, coming off two surgeries, needed about a month or so before his shot started falling. It's real nice. It's real nice to see him starting to play with more confidence. It's exciting that both he and Kevin Porter Jr. are seemingly getting better by the week. And it's kind of really nice timing when you talk about how a casual fan of the NBA would view the Cavs. I think that's a good point where it's whatever sample size they watched. And I don't necessarily blame them for not being in tune with all the little things that are going on and how the Cavs were actually kind of competitive to start the year. And then they kind of got worn down by the schedule. But it seems like this worked out very well where you have Jordan Clarkson traded for Dante Exum right as the schedule is about or has started to ease up. Right as Kevin Porter Jr. and Darius Garland are getting a little bit more confidence. Colin Sexton has been a bit of a mixed bag. He's still a reliable scoring option, but doesn't necessarily have that three-pointer. But having Clarkson gone and saying, all right, these three young guards, we're going to ride them. We're going to play around with how we use them and really make this season about that. It's great timing from that perspective.
Yeah, and the thing with Sexton is he's really a product of the team really missing as much length as they have hurts mm-hmm. him more than anyone else because he gets exposed in them both offensively and defensively. But he's made a lot of strides on the defensive side of the ball this year, which they're very small, subtle things, but he's gotten better at them. If the three-point shot was falling, which for whatever reason it isn't, I think we'd be talking about him as having, you know, a really successful second season. Now he's doing a lot of things better in general, and he's still a productive NBA player over these last, you know, month plus, despite a lot of those shots not falling. So it shows that he can get to the rim now. He needs to get to the free throw line. He needs to hit those three pointers. He needs to do a better job on the shot selection. He needs to move the ball more effectively. Mm-hmm. But again, with him, we're talking about a lot of the same things we're talking about with Garland, but just one extra year. He's not really a guy who had a lot of high school coaching. He definitely didn't have a lot of coaching at Alabama. He didn't have a lot of help at Alabama, and he's been asked to kind of do it all for really probably from the time he was like 6 years old on. So it takes a little bit of time for those guys to trust that they're not just going to blow by a guy. They're not just going to be better than the guy they're playing against and that they have to work within a system. And if that's all you know and you haven't been coached these things, there is an adjustment period. And for him, I think he's so cerebral in how he approaches a game, but he's also so competitive. Sometimes those two things are at odds with each other. Mm-hmm. And he does need to learn when to react and when to break things down. And you know, I talked about this with Larry Nance when I sat down with him a few weeks ago. We've got a piece coming on Dime about, you know, his role on the team and how he approaches Cleveland in general, but also the Cavaliers. And he had said,
expert
you know,
plug right there.
I found a way to get that in there. We'll be talking about, MyPillow.com later probably. But it's really a situation with this team that so many of these young guys need to move from thinking about what they're being coached to just doing what they know they're supposed to do. And in that split second, NBA defenses know how to react. And it's especially on the offensive side of the ball, those guys just got to move. They just got to do it. They got to be in the right place. They got to anticipate. And it can't be a thought. It has to be a reaction. It has to be just this inert knowledge of what you're supposed to do. Once those guys get there, I think the team is going to continue to improve. And it's just a matter of getting good players in there, getting the coaching in there, getting the baseline established, and then repetition. And we're starting to see some of that repetition pay dividends.
Right. And with Sexton, it's funny because him and KPJ seem to have made a very similar adjustment where they're playing more north-south. They're understanding that, hey, I can get by a lot of these guys. There's not a lot of veteran NBA players that want to give that much effort on every single possession when I'm coming at them full speed. And yes, there's been a couple bad shooting games from Sexton, the game against Memphis and again against Minnesota last night. Didn't shoot the ball well, had quite a few turnovers, but I'm okay with him playing that style because he's being decisive. Even if he's not creating other shot opportunities for guys, he's giving up the ball. He's playing that north-south game. And one thing that I've kind of advocated for, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on that, is eventually splitting up Sexton and Garland and moving Kevin Porter Jr. into that starting role, or at the very least do a bit more what Bayline's been doing, where one of them checks out earlier, so you're staggering their minutes. Maybe you don't want to lose either player by moving them to the second unit, so you just use that. But having Sexton play, because he's offensively, when he's with Garland, he's still playing as a point guard. He's still the high usage guy. He's initiating the bulk of the offense, but he's playing a shooting guard defensively. And with kind of the defensive strides he's taken, I'd like to see him defend point guards a little bit more. I'd like to see him with that second unit and just get to play the style that he did last year and see if that doesn't help him get back on track offensively.
This is part of why the Clarkson trade was so exciting for me, regardless of what the haul was. And it's nothing against Jordan, but he comes in the game and he shoots 16 to 20 times.
Right.
Those 20 shots are so valuable to young players, and it allows Sexton and Garland, regardless of who's playing in those minutes, to essentially assert themselves offensively and create an identity in that second unit that really was just Clarkson dribbles and shoots, or someone else gets it with 3 seconds left on the shot clock. And so while there's a lot of value to having an NBA scorer creating on the second unit when things break down, especially on an offensively challenged young team, I think it's time to move past that. And honestly, he helps Utah a lot because they need a guy who can shoot the ball when they don't have things going their way.
100%.
That's Utah's primary problem for the last couple seasons is, well, if Donovan's out and everyone's just kind of looking around, sometimes they just don't have a guy who just says, you know what, screw it, I'm going to go try to score. And sometimes he succeeds very well at it. Sometimes Clarkson does not. And that's, you know, why he's not a superstar player or a starter is, you know, he has games where he can score 40 points, but he also has a lot of games where he's going to shoot 4 for 18 and kind of shoot you out of the ballgame. Well, there's no reason why with a team like this, why not have Garland or Sexton be the guy that's doing that? Like, it doesn't hurt them to be the one that's shooting 18 times. Like, you don't want them to have a low shooting percentage, but in that second unit, like, staggering them is always the game plan. That was always a long-term solution. And I feel like if you ask John, that's the same thing that he would have wanted, but it was just going to be a matter of time of getting to that point, because whenever those guys were paired with, you know, with Clarkson, he was still going to be the one shooting. And then it forces you into a situation where, you know, you look for the guy to pass and it's not going to happen, or you're trying to get yours. And, you know, it was a little bit more muddled than it needed to be. Now it's a little more natural. It's a situation where you can kind of just say, all right, you're out there. We'll get you both in at the same time because you need to develop at that pace. But every once in a while, we're going to have one or the other just be out there, and then you take a seat. And I think long-term, that's what's going to have to happen. You know, starting lineups are starting lineups. You don't want to take away from the development of a guy, so you don't want to hurt their confidence. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, putting Sexton into the second unit was ever a decision that was going to be a good one. Technically, you know, you want him in the starting lineup. He's a second-year guy. He's been a starter since he came into the league. Like, it's a good thing. But him playing with the seconds, I don't think he's going to be upset about that. I think you run out your 8 to 10 guys and you kind of just shift them in and out, especially when some of these other moves start to get made. That staggering is going to be really, really beneficial to them long-term. And I think you're going to start to see confidence be something that comes up from these guys as they continue to figure things out. Also, when you're playing on the second unit, if you're the talented guy playing against the second unit guys, you're not playing against the starting point guards. You're playing against the backups. And like a team like Orlando, you can feast on something like that. Mm-hmm. You can feast against the Knicks, who like don't even have one starting point guard some games. So
Most games.
Where you're going to get that shooting percentage up, you're going to get to the line, and those numbers long-term are going to look better. But within the game, as you're watching that and looking at the film, like, it really helps if you can get 6 quick points, you know, to start the second quarter when some of the other guys aren't in there. And then you maybe have some runs there where the on-off numbers start to look a little bit better too. And then you're not having people screen grabbing stuff out of context just to show how embarrassing it is, even though they don't have that full story.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I really liked with the Clarkson trade, and we got our first taste of it against Minnesota, is Clarkson was always out there with the closing unit. And he was capable of making big plays, good plays on either end of the floor, actually, in that time. But you want the young guys to get those reps. And for Garland to go out there, come in off the bench, hit a three automatically, hit a step back two, and really kind of help seal the game for the Cavs, that was an opportunity he just flat out hadn't had up to that point. And I want the young guys learning in those moments. I want them to have that experience. And I want to live and die with guys that are part of the future. I don't want that to be a Jordan Clarkson moment. And
yeah, and the other situation is you want to lose these games by 1 point if the right guys are taking the shots, because eventually they're going to learn how to hit those shots, or they're going to make the right decisions. Like the best possible scenario for a rebuilding team is you win like 3 out of 4 and then you lose your next 4 by 1 point each. Like, you want the high pick, you need to keep it, you need to stay in the top 10, but you develop some continuity, you develop some confidence, and then you end up with a situation where you know you can play against these teams, even if it's a close loss. Like, then you're a veteran away from winning most of those games, and eventually that's what they're going to need.
Right, and I think the presence of Kevin Porter Jr. and him being ahead of schedule in his development, like, I thought he was a talented player before he got hurt at USC. I was advocating taking him with the Cavs' top pick, or that he would be in that mix if we fell out of the top 4. And for us to land him and for him to just have this work ethic and go out there and really try on the defensive end, like, that's the part that I didn't expect. I was expecting him to be a bit more of a one-way talent, but the plays that he makes, like, obviously he's still a rookie. He makes a lot of mistakes. He gets called for some iffy fouls, but he's also reaching a lot. So he kind of has that reputation, but he has legitimate two-way potential. And I think him being ahead of schedule gave Kobe Altman some confidence, saying, okay, we can get rid of Jordan Clarkson. It's going to allow us to stagger Sexton and Garland a little bit more. KPJ can take on the bulk of the Jordan Clarkson role. And now you got Dante Exum in the mix, who, in my opinion, can take a lot of what you were getting in Delhi, because he's a legitimately good defender that can play alongside any of the guards. He takes good care of the basketball. Yes, he doesn't necessarily have that outside shot, but neither does Delhi at this point. And I just like what he can bring to the table, and I really like taking a flyer on him as someone that's still just 24 years old.
Yeah, and if nothing comes out of it other than the fact that you pushed another, you know, $10 million or so salary into coming and expiring next year, I mean, this team isn't going to use all of that cap room. So right, it's worth taking a shot on that. You know, do you want a first rounder to go with him for taking on that money for one more year? Sure. But if you're not going to get it, the 2 seconds, and at least getting a guy under 25 who has some talent that you can plug in, see. And look, I mean, sometimes a change of scenery is all a guy needs. Like,
oh yeah,
maybe he is someone who legitimately just needed that. But even if he wasn't, this is a no-risk situation. You're just taking on 1 year. There weren't 2 years left on the deal after this year. So I think it really does help from a depth standpoint to start to figure out these minutes, because you were looking at a situation where when Dylan gets in there, you're going to need to find some time for him to be playing too. And so right, there are guys that, you know, you're going to maybe need to try out and see if it's time to kind of push them along or buy them out or find a trade, or just say, look, like, you're not part of where we're at right now. If someone gets hurt, be ready. But there are a couple guys on this team that, like, are getting minutes that, you know, probably aren't going to be getting minutes into the trade deadline, and then more than likely aren't going to be on a team post trade deadline. So
yeah,
you got to start somewhere with that. And I think, you know, making a move that was best for all parties, Jordan involved, you know, included. And this is something I think it's lost in a lot of what the Cavs have done over the last 18 to 24 months, is they've done a really good job of taking care of players. And
yeah,
you know, I think word gets around with these agents that, like, you know, when the time comes, the Cavs are going to do right by you, even if, you know, that's not necessarily a Cleveland-wide sentiment for the teams that Cleveland has over the years. Like, this is a really good thing to hang your hat on if you're Kobe. And, like, I think this is going to help them negotiating contracts with players in the future. And I think with making trades that, you know, this isn't a place that people won't want to come to, because if things go south, he's going to be all right. He's going to find you a home that more than likely isn't on a losing team. It's going to be on a team that's trying to compete. I mean, you look at what happened with Rodney, you look at Clarkson in the mix, you look at Korver, they're going to do the right thing with these guys. And look, maybe it's more often than not with Utah, but sometimes it's good to have a trade partner that's willing, that also is competing.
No, absolutely. And I think that's a really, really intelligent point. And even Kevin Love, I think everyone kind of expected them to throw him away, give him away as soon as LeBron was gone, but they gave him the contract, and yes, it's a tough deal to move, but I think taking care of players is really important. And I mean, in the case of Jordan Clarkson, I think everybody knows that he was one of the people that spoke to Joe Vardon, whether it was directly or through Rich Paul. And obviously the team wasn't in love with all of that, but they still did right by him. They put him in a good situation. And if I'm Utah, I'm happy with this. I feel like it's a win-win trade, which seems to be the way that Kobe Altman operates. He seems to be a guy that does well communicating with other general managers, trying to find a solution that works for both sides, that, hey, this helps us where we're at in our development, and this helps you. So I do think that that's a really, really smart point on, and part of what the Cavs are trying to do, which is change the perception of the franchise, change the culture, try to establish something, some sort of solid foundation that doesn't involve LeBron James.
And that's so hard to do, right? I mean, like, your entire orbit is this one thing. And then the years after the first decision were the orbit of the result of this guy leaving. So that identity was then, it's the identity is still revolving around him. Right. And he comes back and the identity is again, once again, just LeBron. So they never had a chance over, we're talking about, you know, is it the entirety of his career up until the first year post the third decision, you know, where he's with the Lakers. Last year was the first year since 2003 that the Cleveland Cavaliers haven't had their identity based around LeBron James. That's going to take a lot of time. No matter who you are, if you're known to have 15 years of one thing and then that thing is gone, it's going to take some time to reinvent yourself and try to figure out what you want to be moving forward. I mean,
look at the Chicago Bulls. The Chicago Bulls are still just the team, Mike's team. Like, sure, they had the Derrick Rose run, but that's probably more comparable to the Mark Price era in Cleveland. In terms of franchise success, it was just around one player. So it's certainly not an easy thing to do. And I know people have scoffed at the Cavs kind of aiming to be like a Portland or a team like that, that is consistently in the playoffs. But I think that would be a massive, massive step forward for the Cavs and something that the fans would get behind, because you look at it now and the Cavs are one of the only lottery teams in the top 15 in attendance. But it's them and one other team, I believe. Like, the fans show up for this team. Cleveland sports fans are loyal. And to give them a product that's worth caring about, that's consistently in the playoffs, that's got to be the next step. Then you can figure out how you're going to get over the last few hurdles there and get back into contention. But all the focus, all their energy should be going into building something that's sustainable and getting into the playoffs at a consistent clip.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to turn yourself into a championship wings team, and you can't just bank on landing a Doncic or a Giannis. Like, those things happen independent of whether or not you're building culture. Like, you can try to give yourself more shots at it, like Philly did, and, you know, you end up with superstar or generational talents doing it that way. But you can't rely on that. So what the Cavs need to do is they need to, you know, find – really what was going on with the Atlanta Hawks before they bottomed out, you know, find a team that's consistently winning. And if Portland's your example, that's perfectly fine. Look, I mean, there's a lot of worse teams to be than Portland, who again has fan support constantly showing up, has players who are loyal to that program and want to play for Portland and for the city of Portland. You know, it's not a bad place to be. So if you look at kind of living in between those two places and trying to develop talent in that level, and, you know, say what you will about what Atlanta is doing, or, you know, maybe they should be winning more games than they are, or, you know, maybe they've had bad luck, whatever it is, if they, you know, move from Lloyd earlier than they should. But you want to land players who can potentially be all-stars. You want to land starters. You want to land guys that would be really good sixth or seventh men. And then you want to give yourself as many shots at it as you possibly can. Now, some of that is luck. Some of that, especially now with the draft lottery, is out of your control. Look, the Cavs would have taken Luka Doncic. Like, no one's saying they wouldn't have taken it, but they didn't have the chance to. The Cavs would have taken, you know, Zion if they could have, you know, regardless of the injury.
But the Cavs absolutely would have taken Luka. When you look at the Slovenian population in the city, that would have been just, that is just such a no-brainer there. And I know that they would have. But, yeah, unfortunately, we just had to lose that game against Brooklyn.
Yeah, it was, of course, different. The Brooklyn game. Yeah, it's one of those things that just – and now, whatever. But so you can't say that the Cavs made necessarily, like, game-changing, foundationally changing moves that were negative. Like, yes, Colin Sexton isn't as good as Trae Young on the court, but also they weren't picking one versus the other. They were picking an eight. So they were basically like, now Shea wasn't coming. Like, that was proven. So you can't even compare those two guys. It's basically comparing Knox and Sexton. And again, like, when you're losing team, and that team's going to win 14, 18, 22 games, sometimes you need a player who just doesn't care about that and just was going to play as hard as he can. And I think the Cavs knew, like, when they went in their interviews, that they looked at Colin and he was one of those dudes who's like, I don't care, I'll play as hard as I can no matter what. Like,
yeah,
you got to start with those dudes. Yeah, and then, look, if he ends up being the sixth man or the seventh man, he's an NBA player. We've proven that. That's at least a good thing. That isn't a guarantee at the eighth pick. Now Garland looks like an NBA player in the top five. Okay, now what? Can you get a wing next time? Is there a guy that you can get that has a little bit of size that can kind of, you know, play with or without Tristan or Love if you move away from one or both of those guys? Like, that's the next course of circumstances, because, like, the Jetty move was a smart one. I mean, you're paying him, like, the 35th best small forward.
Right? Yeah, he's being paid to be a 7-3 man, which is why you're hoping eventually maybe Dylan Windler can spell some of his minutes, and then down the line you actually draft a small forward or you get one in free agency or through a trade or something like that. The KPJ move to me is one that this franchise is going to have to either replicate, or you got to hit on moves like that to really get yourself over the hump. Because if you look at what he's doing this season, assuming this continues throughout the year, if he had this growth, if he stayed in college and had this growth, he's a top five pick in the 2020 draft, or at least a top 10 pick. Without a doubt,
he's a perfect example of those guys who just, like, needed coaching and didn't get it. And when you say, oh, well, we don't want Bayline to be coaching like he's in college, well, actually, a lot of the players on this team didn't really get coached in college. So we kind of need them to have a year or two like they're being treated like they're in college. And look, if that's all it is he does this for two or three years, and then they've got enough players and enough talent that these dudes then grow up to be NBA players and he hands it off, then he did his job and he earned his money. Like, right now, though, that these guys, Garland didn't get coached. He didn't even play in college. So you can't say that he was ready for the NBA. And when you're getting into a set of circumstances like this, when you don't have a lot of veterans long-term who are interested in bringing these guys along, and that's the big thing. There are veterans on this roster, but are those veterans, the older players who played in the championship teams, are they interested in bringing players along from a developmental standpoint? And the answer is probably no. And you can't fault them for that because they're in the finals for 4 years. That's really, really hard. That is very mentally taxing. And now you're telling me I have to care about these kids? No, that's not necessarily what they signed up for. So you can't blame those guys, but also you can't blame the coaching staff or the front office for wanting to bring the players along that are now part of the future. And KPJ is a perfect example of this. Look at all the other players that were kind of in that grouping. The strides that he's made already are phenomenal. And now it's just a matter of building up that toolkit and building that skill set and then telling him where he needs to be and when. Like, his biggest problem is just spatial awareness. The dude just has never been in a certain – he's probably never studied film before until this point.
Yeah.
Now when you start to see where people are going to be and you know what angle you need to be in, his you know, he's got great instincts. He's got great athleticism, and the tools are there. Now it's just put them into effect and put him in the best position he can be to succeed.
Yeah, I love the Tristan quote where he was talking about how he was talking to KPJ and said, hey, you're doing a little too much out there. You can do less and get by, guys. Like, you don't have to pull out every single trick that's in your bag to get by NBA defenders. You can flat out score. And since then, it seems like he's really playing and scoring at an efficient rate. I think the three-point shot they'll probably remake to some extent in the summer. Already there's a little bit less motion than there was before, and he's got a wider base than he had in college. But actually reconstructing that and getting rid of the hitch, I don't think that's something you mess around with during the season. Right now it's just about making the right decision and getting those reps. And I understand the tension. Like, it's weird when you have half the team that is at a certain stage of their development and needs to go over the fundamentals, and is studying film at this level for the first time. Darius Garland and Kim Porter Jr. adjusting to what NBA defenders can and cannot do. And then you have the other half of the team where it's, okay, we're past this. We've had deep playoff runs, or we've been in this league for a long time. We don't need to do this. And I give Tristan Thompson a lot of credit because he seems to be one of the few guys, maybe it's just an understanding of, hey, Cleveland probably has more appreciation for me than any other franchise would. And I get to be a vocal leader here, and that's something that he enjoys doing. But I give him a lot of credit for the way that he's stepped up in this way. And I don't necessarily blame Kevin Love for not being on the same page there when it comes to developing these guys.
Yeah, I wouldn't speak negatively about Kevin at all. I mean, the thing is, when I speak positively about Tristan, it's actually just Tristan. Because look at Tristan Thompson over the last few seasons. To see him doing this at this stage of his career is – it's astounding to me. It's not something I would have expected. And it says a lot about, you know, his commitment to becoming a better pro, but also becoming a better teammate. And it shows that those championship runs really had an effect on him, but also that, you know, not winning has had an effect on him too. Because, you know, when you just kind of slide in and you have a little bit of losing, but then just the Messiah shows up and everything's great and you just are asked to do one thing, it's easy to become complacent in some way that, like, you're just good. And there were times, even when that team was winning, that he wasn't seeing the floor. He wasn't necessarily in the best shape that he could have been in. He wasn't working as hard as he needed to because he was eating regardless. He was fine. He had that contract. He had a winning team. He saw the bottom last year, and he doesn't want that. And he also knows that he can have an effect on what happens moving forward. And I think when you start to move up those Cavs record books – and you start to see your name among these other guys and you're close to number one, you kind of want to be number one. He sees how much the Cavs love Z, how much the people of Cleveland love Z. He wants that love because he's been here long enough. Like, he feels like he probably deserves it. Now, is it earned or is it given? Well, that's up to him. And so I'm really, really impressed with what he's done this season. And I think that's one of those things nationally that's just, like, not going to get talked about because the team's not in the playoff hunt or anything. But those little things are missing from teams that never climb out of it. And if they do and are able to, he's going to deserve a ton of credit, whether or not he's on this team 3 years from now or not, whether or not he's on this team 3 months from now or not. Him speaking up and basically just being the voice in the room, being the adult in the room, and just, like, saying every time there was a report that everyone needs to shut up and things are fine, or, like, taking ownership of stuff, like, that's so huge for those kids because – they're looking. They're always in the locker room. They're looking at those guys. They're saying, okay, who's going to speak up? Is it going to be Tristan? Is it going to be Kevin? Who's going to do it? Tristan's consistently rang that bell for the last, like, really season and a half now. And he wouldn't have done that if, you know, that's not something he would have done 3 years ago.
No, absolutely not. And he's always wanted to be a leader, but it's not something that you can just wake up and decide that you're going to be a leader and do a good job of it. I mean, Kyrie's learning this as well. I think Tristan's a guy that he's probably getting his jersey retired either way at this point, but if he were to sign on for, let's say, another 3 years after this season, at kind of one of those middle of the road, half favor to the team, half favor to him, 3 year contracts, I think at that point it's basically a guarantee that he'd have his number retired. And from a leadership perspective, like, even the time where he lost his mind at Colin Sexton for not running a play and kind of exploded screaming at John Boeheim, for him to go from that moment where he lost his shit and lost his cool, and go to the bench, sit next to the coaches, be engaged the whole time as he was benched, and to kind of make up with Boeheim publicly and show that you can have these little explosions, you can have these moments where your competitive side just takes over, and you don't have to have it be something that escalates. It's not something, well, me and coach are just never going to get along. I think that that's a even though it was a moment of weakness and he screwed up there, I think that's still a good example and a good thing for the young guys to see.
Yeah, what is that thing? The character isn't what happens to you. It's how you react to what happens to you. And so even if you make a decision, like, have you moved on? Have you learned from it? And that's the type of thing. He could have got himself benched for a few games because of that. But he spoke up right away. And that's why, you know, it was fun playing that guessing game of like, who's in the Vardon report? It could have been its own like game show every time we do this with athletic guys, but it was pretty easy to tell kind of like who was talking, who wasn't, and reading between the lines. And it seemed out of character for Tristan. It wouldn't have been Tristan because he's been the guy constantly the entire year, just being honest and upfront about how he's feeling. Like, he doesn't need to say things not publicly because you could go ask him, he's going to tell you. Yeah. So for him to say then that next day, and now whether or not he was speaking to guys or not, like, he may have, I'm not saying that those guys don't vent to reporters, but he was the one that said afterward, like, come to me and I'll tell you how I feel. And someone had to say it. Someone had to calm that all down the day after.
Yeah.
And like, that locker room was not doing great. And then they lost a very winnable game on that Friday and then got absolutely blasted on a back-to-back after that with Kevin Sick and, you know, everything else that was going on. And so that could have turned into an absolute hellscape. And look at what's happened in December since then. Like,
yeah,
they've been really competitive. The Rockets game, you've got all of the wins that they've had aside from that. Like, it feels like a different team. And that was this month. That happened in December.
It feels like the early season version of this, where they're really giving that effort. And obviously the young guys improving also kind of helps raise your floor a little bit. But that's a great point, that it has been such a quick turnaround. And when they had lesser competition, that switch flipped and the effort was right back there. And maybe from Kevin's perspective, some of that's understanding he's going to need to play well if he does want to get moved, because as much as the team wants to do right by him, he has a tough contract to move and they're going to want to get something back of value. All right, guys, we're going to get back to the podcast with Martin Rickman in just a second, but I got to give a shout out to our sponsor for this week, Untuck It. You ever see an untucked button down? They look bad. Why? Because they weren't meant to be worn that way. Thankfully, there's Untuck It, the original button down shirt actually designed to be worn untucked. No matter your size or shape, Untuck It shirts always fall at the perfect length when untucked. You can find your favorite Untuck It style online or check out one of their 80 brick and mortar stores. Choose from styles like wrinkle-free button-downs, super soft flannels, outerwear, and more. With Untuck It, your shirts will never look baggy, bulgy, too long, or too big again. And their website is so easy to use, they even have a whole page devoted to helping you find your fit. So whether you're shopping for the perfect holiday gift or just trying to craft a smart, relaxed style of your own, Untuck It is the way to go. Visit untuckit.com and use code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. That's UNTUCKIT.com and promo code BLUE for 20% off at checkout. And now, back to the podcast. I do want to pivot to kind of talking about the veterans and where you feel they fit into this long-term picture. Obviously, Kevin Love's a big one. We don't have to get into that right away. But other guys like John Henson, who's actually been valuable for this team, Brandon Knight, Matthew Dellavedova, I don't think he gets moved. But of the vets, who do you actually see getting moved this season, if you had to guess?
Yeah, you know, it's a fun guessing game here, but I think they're going to actively shop Kevin as much as possible. I think if they find a deal that makes sense, they'll move him because it's the right thing to do, but also organizationally, like, it's time probably to not have this team revolve around Kevin Love. I just, I think that's if you're going into a guard oriented team, you don't need a post player who demands and commands touches as often as he does. And then, you know, if he's not getting them, isn't 24-year-old Kevin Love to where he can just get 20-20 by just being on the floor? Like, that's not who he is anymore. So I think he's probably someone that they most like to move. I think Henson probably is the easiest to move because he's shown,
agreed,
when healthy, he's a very helpful player on the defensive end of the floor. No one's going to want Delly, and you're not going to get anything back for him. So you just let him play out this deal, and then if he's still in the NBA after this, cool. If he isn't, then look, I mean, the dude made his money and was a hero and has a ring. So, like,
he'll have a nice little coaching job on the Cavs.
Yeah, and he can play for the Aussie national team and have a great time. And in the meantime, you know, he gets to hang out with Dante, and hopefully I would keep him around just to, like, be a good voice for Dante, because then you might see him learning some really good habits heading into that second year that Exum has. So I would say Henson's probably the most likely moved. I think Knight's probably going to get moved. It's going to be a really small deal, but he doesn't show what he can do for a team, but you throw him in the game for 12 minutes on a team that's already, you know, has what they need. He can probably help somebody. Not a lot, but I don't see him being here after the trade deadline. And then I honestly think of everyone, Tristan's the one who's going to stick around despite the fact that he has the most value. Cause I just don't think that they're going to part with him unless someone offers really an astronomical set of circumstances. Like maybe the Cavs get offered Kyle Kuzma in a future pick. Like it's not going to happen, but like, that's the type of thing where you'd make that move, but you're not making the move unless you get something that really makes you feel like you're better after this move than what you're losing in the locker room because of all the stability that he's bringing. Cause I do think that, again, who are they going to sign with that money? They have so much cap room.
That's the big thing is, and especially if you're just kind of pushing back, like Cleveland isn't going to attract a tier one free agent.
They're not going to go out there and sign Andre Drummond. Like, that's not happening.
Right. Right. So I think if the young guys pan out, like let's say in 2 years, Garland, KPJ, Sexton, whoever is here, whoever they draft in this draft, let's say those guys are looking good and they're a fun place to play basketball. I think as long as you have flexibility to go sign someone like Paul Millsap, like what Denver did there, that's what you kind of want to preserve. You want to get a veteran that's going to help raise your ceiling that fits well with the young guys. You want to be a place that's attractive to play, but you're not going to get a Giannis. You're not going to get a Kevin Durant or a Kyrie. That's just not going to happen. I completely agree with you. I think re-signing Tristan would be the smart way to go about this. And I think, as you mentioned before, the leadership that he can bring, that's really, really tough to find a veteran that's had experience, that has some of that cachet, that's won and is still willing to help with the rebuild, that still fits with them. I mean, he's 28 years old. Like he can still help them on the court and fits well with the young guards and can set good screens and is going to help clean up misses when they're not on. So that mix, I really think as long as Tristan has a willingness to stay in Cleveland, I think they should prioritize keeping him over the other veterans.
Yeah, I just don't see that move hurting them if they sign a 2+1 and they front load it. Like, are they? They're not hurting their clock.
Yeah. No. Absolutely.
They're only paying him until he's 31 years old. Like, and I think he'd take that deal. I think he would get there, and then he'd say, "All right, we're either competing, and I'll sign one more, or I'm out." Then when I'm 31, and I'm going to take whatever amount of money I can get after that, winning or not winning from there. But
yeah, and that at that point, he's given you over a decade of playing his ass off. Like you're perfectly fine with that at that point. Hopefully you have someone that he'd be mentoring and bringing up at the center
position
as well.
So unless you're taking on money in one of these deals, and you're probably going to need to with whatever Love deal you make, unless you do this like that Whiteside thing that everyone keeps talking about. But I mean, you're not, I just don't think you're getting an expiring deal for Kevin Love. I think that's going to be the poison pill on this one, is you're going to get the package that you relatively want, but you're going to be taking on some money that you're not really thrilled about. So you keep that option available. But even
I'd be perfectly fine with that.
Because who do you want? I mean, do you want to try to give a ton of money to Gordon Hayward? Do you want to try to give a ton of money to Otto Porter? Like, are you going to pay DeMar DeRozan? Like,
man, I was such an Otto Porter guy before he just like went in the toilet this year with his health. I would have been perfectly fine giving him too much money, especially with no small forwards really being in this draft. But that's gone out the window. I mean, the only free agent that I'd throw money at is probably Brandon Ingram. But if David Griffin is willing to let him walk for whatever you're offering him, that's not a great sign. That's not a great sign on how that contract's going to work.
They're not. I can tell you right now, they're not letting Brandon
Agreed.
Go.
Agreed.
I don't know a lot in this world, but they're not going to – they're going to max out Brandon Ingram. They're going to make him the face of that franchise with Zion Williamson, and they're going to hope that every three-pointer he makes is another opportunity to spit on the Lakers and all of the, you know, poor negotiation potential things that they could, and they're going to really just align that with their fan base because they know how angry their fans get and how much you can use that as a weapon and use that to help keep your fans happy. And so if he becomes a star player, how excited do those fans get after all of that we held out and we got Ingram anyway, and we picked the right guy over Kuzma, who's feuding with LeBron and his trainer doesn't even like him. Like,
do you think the Pelicans actually wanted Kuzma that bad? Because
I have no idea.
Yeah. I feel like that might've either been how the Lakers decided to sell it publicly. And they're like, hey, we got to keep the guy that we wanted. Actually, that's the only scenario I can see coming, because I don't believe that Griff valued.
No, I think they were able to ring getting hard and another first out of it instead, and I think that was the right decision. I mean,
absolutely,
it just was.
Yeah.
Kuzma doesn't fit anything they want to do because he needs shots, and you got all these other players who also need shots, and you assume that you were going to get Zion, who's going to want the ball too, like. You can't have Zion and Ingram and Kuzma all saying they want 20 shots a game. That just doesn't exist when you still have Drew Holiday and you were supposedly competing for a playoff spot. Like,
he needs shots and he's not good at making them. That's not a great.
And look, I have nothing against Kyle Kuzma, but he just didn't fit. He didn't fit their timeline, because he's going to be like 35 years old next year. Fits the
Lakers. That's the other thing. He's the same age as Jetty. He's 24, turning 25. Like,
when Jetty looks like he's like 14. So
yeah, exactly. Before we wrap this up, do you have a Kevin Love prediction in terms of where he ends up? Mine has been Phoenix. I really feel like Phoenix is the right spot.
I'm with you. I mean, you had that proposal that you dropped from Trade Machine, and like, not even lying, that was the same exact deal that I talked to my dad about when we were driving home from a game.
Oh yeah.
It just makes so much sense, despite the fact where I said like they're not going to try to get an expiring if they don't have to, but like that Tyler Johnson isn't bringing anyone into Phoenix. Phoenix is in a very similar situation to a lot of other teams where they don't get stars, so sometimes you have to overpay to get them, and that overpay could be in trade or could be in length of a deal, and that deal's already signed. But like,
yeah, Phoenix doesn't have long-term bad money. Like that's the thing. Yeah. Tyler Johnson's the only guy that they have to make the money match. And that's why I'd be okay with, if it is Tyler Johnson, Saric, and Mikal Bridges, I'd honestly be okay with not getting a first. Like, maybe if you get a second or two thrown in there.
I mean, Bridges is a player that every Cavs fan would have been fine with drafting.
I wanted him at 8. I wanted him badly at 8.
And he's exactly what they need, right? Like, you need wing depth, and you're going to – whatever you do with Dario is fine, but, like, he's the type of player that team needs. And Bridges is someone that you can slot right in, and he'll do exactly what you need him to do.
Like, yeah.
He's going to shoot when he's open. He's going to defend his ass off, and he's going to keep his mouth shut. Like – you need players like that, especially young players like that who can grow and maybe make a leap. You never know. Like, Jaylen Brown was not a guaranteed superstar, but he was a smart player who played defense and made shots when you needed him to. And then all of a sudden, he's now like untouchable. Every once in a while, those guys make the jump, but they all have that same DNA. And like, not comparing those two guys, I'm just saying you need to bring in as many players like that. You're never going to be upset bringing in a long wing player who can defend and hit threes predictably. Like, his threes haven't come along to the level with which they should yet, Mikal, but like, he's gonna shoot better. It's just a matter of time.
No,
I think that deal would be perfectly fine, because look, like, you've got a clean slate. You didn't have to do anything to make it happen. And maybe you do, maybe you flip another player in that deal to them and you do end up with a first, or you give 2 seconds to get a first. It doesn't matter. Like, I'm fine with however they engineer this, but you don't have to overcomplicate this. And look, the Suns are panicking a little bit, And they have to decide right now, are they going to give up on this season? And if they are, then they're not trading for Kevin Love, probably not. Right. I don't know. Or do you want to just pair him and then see what you've got? And look, I think he'd be a really good fit with Aiton.
I do too. Especially when you factor in that he's got such a good relationship with Ricky Rubio as well. Like, yep. I think that's a situation that could work out.
Just imagine all those amazing Instagram pictures in the desert. Like, Kevin would love it out there.
Yeah. He and the girlfriend would definitely enjoy that Arizona weather. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that happens. The biggest thing is I really would love to get a small forward worth caring about in a Kevin Love trade, because there just isn't one in this draft. If you're drafting high, which is frustrating. Maybe Anthony Edwards is kind of the one guy that can play some three. But for the most part, it's guards and centers, which, I mean, you take best player available at this point, but it's a little frustrating that we just cannot fill that LeBron hole. So getting Mikal Bridges and
I mean, that's going to be the Cavs' lot in life, though. That's just going to be one of those things is you had arguably the best small forward of all time, and so for the rest of history, you're not going to end up with a small forward who's any mm-hmm. good.
It is the Chase Down podcast. Already, you don't have to say arguably. I think he's got greatest small forward of lockdown. I think, in my opinion, greatest player of all time. That's the one you can say arguably.
I'm a hedge small forward, man, Justin. I don't like to make. I'm not a take guy. I'm a. You know. I'm nuance.
I know, and I appreciate your nuance, and I appreciate you coming on this podcast, man. Martin, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on. For all our listeners, make sure you go follow him at Martin Rickman. Really looking forward to that Larry Nance piece when it drops. Make sure you hit me up with that, because I can be a little spacey sometimes, which is it happens, you know. It's the way that I roll. But really, really do appreciate you coming on that.
Anytime. I'm always good to talk about the league, the association, but especially the Cleveland Cavaliers.
We will definitely bug you again this year. Maybe once Carter gets on here, because I'm sure Carter would absolutely love to talk to you as well. So thanks again, Martin. Thank you to all our listeners. Remember, if you want to support the podcast, you can leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe to help cook those books and take advantage of Apple's flawed metrics. You can also subscribe to the Chase Down Premium. Just Google Chase Down Premium, 99 cents for your first month, plus $5 a month after that. We got youth reports. I do a weekly kind of verbal essay on how the young guys are looking, their stats for the week, and give kind of in-depth thoughts there. We got breaking news pods and a whole bunch of bonus stuff for the podcast. So if you want to support us that way, we appreciate it. But however you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Thank you to Martin. Thank you to our listeners. And until next time, go Cavs.